Welcome to Vanity Project. That's not the theme song. I just did a weird sing-song thing with my voice. Oh, I've nailed this intro. Take two. Welcome to Vanity Project.
This is still take one. You are the professional of us two. I'm supposed to be the clown and you're the one who's on the trail.
I'm sorry, everyone. I'm just so musically gifted. I couldn't help but put some melody into the introduction. Welcome to Vanity Project. This is a podcast where we listen to the sometimes ill-judged, sometimes very well-executed albums of Hollywood A-listers. I am joined, as always, by comedian, writer, and typical Virgo, James Colley.
Am I a Virgo?
I had to look it up. I didn't know.
Oh, man, I'm a cosmic virgin.
Sucked in. I actually had to look up what star sign you are, James. The characteristics of a Virgo, for all of you playing along at home, are altruistic, shy, James, neat, yep. Meticulous, which is spelt wrong, which is quite ironic, really. Engaging, that's true. Industrious, very true. And self-deprecating.
A little bit. I had someone the other day, quite judgingly ask me my daughter's star sign, which I didn't know, and then they worked out for me, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's all right. I'm like, well, what was the other option for this? You're like, oh, is it a rubbish one? Well, pop her in the bin. We'll try again.
That's a horrible thing to say to someone. Each star sign, I'm sure, has their own strengths and flaws. I don't know a lot about it, but I presume that's how it works.
I reckon about 1 in 12 people suck, and that kind of works out. So maybe there is one very bad one.
Really? 1 in 12? That's a very optimistic view on the world.
And that we could section them off all into about a month.
Listeners, even though we've taken a beautiful tangent into astrology, we're not here to discuss star signs today. James, we're here to discuss quite an interesting album.
Yeah, and a spooky album. So I don't think we're too far off. We're in the realm of the supernatural this week. We are discussing Dead Man's Bones. Now, you might be thinking this is a celebrity album show, and who is the Dead Man's Bones? Is there a famous skeleton that I am not aware of who has started very many things? And yes, there are quite a few. They are inside the actors that you know very well. Mm-hmm. And in this case, this is the band featuring producer and director Zach Shields, an A-lister, absolutely, that we're focusing this episode on, and his lesser-known partner, Baby Goose.
Wait a minute, James. Baby Goose? I don't know who that is.
We're very good at this. We should do a
panto. Stick the landing. Here we go.
Well, Bridie, Baby Goose is Ryan Gosling.
Goodness.
Which is something that I did not get until I just said it out loud then. I didn't realize that's why they called him Baby Goose. Just thought they chose a name.
Well, this has been another episode of Vanity Project. And on that note, that's it. Goodbye forever.
I thought it was a Top Gun thing because there was Goose in Top Gun.
Oh, you are such a typical Virgo right now, you idiot. Baby Goose, yes, Ryan Gosling. So this album came out in 2009 and it was released, fun fact, just in time for Halloween. We'll talk about that later, but that was a key part of the release, the promotion, the touring of this album was that it was spooky. It was released in time for the Halloween season. I will say right off the bat, before we even listen to some of the tracks, having listened to this album a couple of times, I definitely think the right weather and vibe to listen to this album is Halloween in America, right? Fall, it's a little cold and crisp in the air. It is not, for a Southern Hemisphere, very humid summer. The weather and the album have not matched.
I do like you're right. You feel like you should be in, you know, at the very least, Wuthering Heights. Like, it feels like that kind of vibe for the album. I also love the idea of we're releasing a spooky record and it's for Halloween. I would be so much more on board. If Steven Seagal had said this is a Halloween-based album, it would have made twice as much sense. I would have understood it a lot better because it'd be like, oh, no, he's supposed to be, like, crazy. He's trying to get you to leave his mansion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In fact, I would just like more holiday season themed albums in general from our A-listers. Now, before we like talk about the album itself, let's talk about Baby Goose, Ryan Baby Goose. Gosling. He wasn't a baby at this time in 2009. I think he was in his... I just want the listeners to know he's neither a baby nor a goose. It's important. He's a human man, an adult human man.
That was our introduction for every artist we go. Now, you were probably thinking Brie Larson was a baby making this album, but in fact, she was not a baby at all.
No, you've mentioned Brie Larson, and I need to make a quick disclaimer. I've had Finally Out of PE stuck in my head all week, that title track, so I've had to review it. It's a banger. I'm just putting it on the record. Yeah, so the adult human man, Ryan Gosling, by this time in 2009 was already fairly well established as an actor. I did a little look at his IMDb page and immediately regretted it because as an actor myself, I have been filled with just quite annoying sense of inadequacy when I see that he has been working since the mid-90s. He's not even that old. He'd just been on 1,000 things by this time. Of course, he was in the Mickey Mouse Club. That's quite mm-hmm. famous.
Which we have talked about before. The Mickey Mouse Club is the Illuminati. Like, this is where it started out a lot earlier. Everyone's like, it's a clandestine group now. No, they were the Mickey Mouse Club, and they were fairly out in the open.
Yeah, I think you bang on the money, and that should be our second season of this. We should do an investigation into that. yeah, so he'd done the Mickey Mouse Club. He had been in Young Hercules, who could forget? And he'd done The Notebook, you know, among literally dozens of other projects. So he's very established. He's not quite the A-lister at this point in his career that he is now, but he was definitely on the rise.
What is your quintessential Ryan Gosling? Like, what when you think Ryan Gosling, what film do you go to, what performance?
Oh, I have to make a confession.
Go on.
Okay. I don't know if I can like get kicked out of the millennials of our generation. Because I know he's like everyone's celebrity crush and everyone's obsessed with The Notebook. I think The Notebook is one of the most boring films I've ever watched. And I've never had a crush on Ryan Gosling. There are other better Ryans. Sorry. He seems lovely. He seems like a nice guy, but he's never been the actor for me. So I can't really answer your question with anything definitive. I think this album might be my favorite thing that he's done.
I would say for me, it's Drive. It's like, because I'm a young male, like Drive is my Ryan Gosling film. I very much like Drive, but it meant that when I came into this album without knowing it had a spooky hook, when I came into this album and I knew it was Ryan Gosling and another dude, I was expecting the kind of electro music of Drive. I was expecting like the tense electro all the way through, which is absolutely not what we're getting here.
That is such flawed logic. If Orlando Bloom released an album, would you be like, I expected just like elven mumblings by Enya and orchestral Howard Shore tracks?
No, that's ridiculous. I expected pirate songs.
Okay, well, I didn't have any expectations about how this album was going to sound because although I know a lot about Ryan Gosling as an actor, I know more about him from interviews where he talks about process more than his projects. And I find him quite interesting in that realm. I think he's a really switched on, interesting artist. The Notebook, just like everyone cheer up, you know, that's the vibe. Just cheer up.
This is fascinating to me because as much as I like Drive, my major thought of Ryan Gosling is a tea towel my old housemate used to own that was a Hey Girl Ryan uh-huh. Gosling affirmation tea towel. Like that meme is Ryan Gosling to me. I am surprised you have never been enchanted by the Baby Goose.
There's just so many other Ryans that I would... Like if I'm
ranking, can I get a top three Ryan?
Okay, we got Reynolds, we got Quentin, we got Seacrest. No, Ryan that I went to school with, lovely guy.
Oh well, that's a Ryan. That's a kind of a Ryan.
I think he's a good actor. I just don't have any strong feelings about Ryan Gosling. That's it. Your tea towel sounds great, though.
So, but something we should discuss coming in here is this our least vain vanity project? Because I don't know if you know this, Bridie, but Baby Goose, which is what he was billed as on this album, is actually an oblique reference to his name, Ryan Gosling. And a lot of very intelligent people would not get that. You'd need the punks down at Bletchley Park to pull that one apart.
I'm really glad that you cleared that up for me, because there's absolutely no way that I could have got that.
Like, I did think that, like, he's a bit hidden in this. Like, he wasn't trying to put himself out there, which was a belief I listened to this album with, that this may not be a vanity project. And I believe that all the way up until I watched the documentary they made about the performance of this album that was following them and a children's choir around for their antics, that included telling an acrobat to please stop flashing her chest in a room full of children, which is a fair note. And I would say Ryan Gosling was on the right side of this album, that while that is spooky, it is not the kind of spooky they were going for.
Look, I think you're raising some good questions here. You're making some good points. I don't know how vain it is either. He is quite hidden in it. And I think you're right. I think the promotion and sort of like execution of the album and album tour is the more vain part than actually making the album. Mm. I think it's confident, but I don't know if I think it's vain. Shall we dig into the backstory of how this album came to be? Because it's quite interesting. Please. Yeah.
So 20 years ago on this very night.
It was dark and stormy. So let me take you back to 2005. Ryan Gosling was dating Rachel McAdams from the aforementioned The Notebook, and Rachel McAdams' sister was dating a guy called Zach Shields, who is an editor and producer and director and a whole bunch of awesome stuff in the industry. And then Ryan and Zach, who met through the sisters they were dating, bonded over a shared fascination about all things supernatural. And it turns out that
Dudes rock. It's exactly like this is, I've been in this situation before. You are dating someone, you meet someone else in the family, you're stuck together on a couch at a family gathering, and one of you turns to the other, it's like, do you believe in ghosts? You're friends for life.
Oh my God, you talk about ghosts and girls talk about being ghosted, the literal ghost that we have to deal with all the time in stupid toxic dating culture. Anyway, so it turns out that they both love ghosts. They both love the supernatural. Apparently Ryan Gosling's parents had actually moved the family out of their childhood home because they believed it was haunted, which, you know, is terrifying. Zach was so preoccupied with ghosts and the idea of what happens when you die that he saw a psychologist about it as a child, and they like really
I've seen that before in The Sixth Sense. It doesn't work out. It means he was dead the whole time.
Wait, it says Bruce Willis was there too. Anyway, so they had this shared love. They bonded all over all things supernatural. And then they found out that one of their like favorite things that they had in common was an obsession with the Haunted Mansion ride at Disneyland, which is just, again, maybe it is a normal conversation for dudes, but I'm like, how did any of this stuff come up? James, you're nodding like this is the most normal thing in the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Anyway, so they found out they had this shared love, and then they decided that they wanted to do something creative inspired by all of that, and they decided that they were going to write a play or a musical. And so that's where the sort of genesis of this album is. It was going to be like the soundtrack to a spooky play.
Do you know what's really haunting me about this?
Tell me.
This is a more successful version of a series of events in my own life that led to us making a yacht rock musical. So I just don't know if I have the higher ground on this. You meet a dude through someone that's dating someone. You're like, do you know what's a weird obsession we both have? Let's make a musical out of this. Oh, it didn't go well. That seems to be like I've completely lost the higher ground. This, so as much as you related to all of the angst of Brie Larson's album, I am relating to all of the dudes rock of this album.
That is great. This is why you're squirming in your chair as we record this. You look distinctly uncomfortable. Well, they scrapped the play / musical theater project / whatever it was going to be because it became financially unviable, but they still had the ideas for a bunch of songs, and that is how this album came to be.
So this is a musical. Like, we should be coming into this with like the idea that at the very least there might be a hint of a plot or a spooky theme, which makes sense because like there are things that come back. Like this is clearly an album. And as much as like a lot of the other ones we do are a collection of 10 mm-hmm. songs, this is an album. And I feel like they've done that. Should we start off with the intro?
I mean, it's a great place to begin.
My suitcase is packed with all your heartbeats. So I walk to their sound and head towards the sun.
Brady, can I get a spook check to start off with? How spooked are you at this point?
Goosebumps all over my body. Hair is standing on end. Terrified. How spooked are you?
Not at all, because this sounds like the kind of extract that plays between songs on Lemonade. Like, it sounds more like just vaguely inspirational than it does scary. But
did
you know,
it hit
I
you
like
hear
it.
The spooky wind sound effects? That is spooky weather.
Let's go straight to the first track on this mm-hmm. called Dead Hearts. That was Dead Hearts from Dead Man's Bones.
Oi.
Bridie, what do you reckon?
I thought the song was quite boring, but then the screaming started. And after that, my interest in this song picked right on up. It's quite slow. You're lulled into a sense of false security for about a minute and a half, and then the screaming starts.
Do you know what this really, like, what detail that really springs to mind from what you were saying earlier is this is the intro of a ghost train. It's like, all right, everyone want to strap in here, get comfortable. Duh! Like, it's not a good ghost train, but at least you're starting out somewhere. Like, this, I don't mind. Usually we say that the first couple of songs do a terrible job setting the scene for the album, that they're just not selling your album, put your banger up the top. I'm okay with them taking a little bit of time here. And we also get the first incarnation of what is a horror genre standard, and I'm so glad they brought it in, creepy children.
Oh, let's discuss the creepy children. These are not just any creepy children. They are hand-picked creepy children. It's very exciting.
They are the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music Children's Choir, which means they are the scariest thing of all, theatre kids.
Hey, you rag on theatre kids and musical theatre every week on this podcast. You're the only one who's written a musical out of the two of us. You just admitted it.
It was That's a right. trap to lose the money.
It's the Silver Lake Conservatory Children's Choir, who feature on most of the tracks of this album. So if you're scared of creepy children's choirs, it's a great time to stop listening to this. But the children's choir in question has quite an interesting little bit of trivia around it. It was formed by Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Did you read that?
Presumably for a musical project. It's not that like Flea, like there is a way I can see a world where Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers does operate as a kind of Pied Piper system, going from town to town, gets all the children together, assembles them into a choir, moves on to the next town. It's quite inspirational. I just watched the film Coda. I could imagine Flea being like the teacher in Coda, which is a joke those of you who enjoy the Oscars buzz will like.
It is not part of some weird musical project that Flea has put together. It is, in fact, a non-profit. It's a music school that provides scholarships to children whose families would otherwise not be able to afford musical education. So, beautiful.
And okay, then sorry. So you let me go on for a minute and a 100%. Half about these creepy freaking children. They suck and they scare me. And you're like, well, they're underprivileged kids that have been put together in an organization to chase their dreams together. But if you find that creepy, I guess that's fine.
James, of course I did. Hey, and also, I agree with you. This is creepy. That a children, like, we're going to discuss it in some of the upcoming tracks. The children's choir has been specifically chosen for a Halloween-themed spooky album, right?
Yeah.
If you're feeling creeped out, that is a valid response because it's a well-worn horror trope to use beautiful, pure children's voices to scare the living daylight out of us, and it works.
Yeah, this isn't like a Qantas ad where the kids are insanely creepy and that's a pure accident and that's why they left them in the middle of the desert. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. They filmed the ad, they sang We Still Call Australia Home, and everyone's like, let's just fucking leave these kids here. They give me the heebie-jeebies.
Those kids are probably our age now.
Oh, God. If you are listening and you are one of those children, write in and we will perform an exorcism. Let's move on to our next track. In the Room Where You Sleep. Touching your head, where you sleep, in the room where you sleep, where you sleep. Friday.
Mm.
I like this song.
I like this song so much. It's so
this is
fun.
Really fun.
It's so fun.
When I was getting into this, I'm like, oh my God, has Ryan Gosling made a good album here?
It's really catchy because the album is themed as, you know, as we discussed before, originally it was going to be like the soundtrack to like a monster ghost kind of play. You know, the lyrics, I saw something sitting on your bed. I saw something touching your head in the room where you sleep. It kind of feels like a scary picture book. You remember like the scary kids books that were quite fun to read, like a bedtime story, which is like a little bit edgy when you're a kid. The lyrics remind me of that. It's really fun and it's just catchy. It's got a great tempo, the way it picks up, that kind of like stompy vibe to it. I love it.
It feels like a haunted carnival, which is awesome. Like I'm hugely, I'm so in on this at this point of the album, where this is like also, it rewards you from getting through the last couple of, like it's a very dry and slow start. And then you're immediately like, don't worry, this will be okay. This is going to be fun.
I think so. And it's, I don't know, maybe this is a spoiler alert, but I'm inclined to agree with that because I thought the intro and the first track, Dead Hearts, were probably, well, I don't know if weakest is the right word, but just like least engaging tracks. But on the plus side, that means the only way is up. And I find the rest of the album much more captivating.
Let's have a listen to Buried in Water. The wolves there in the skin of the sheep.
This track gives me serious Over the Garden Wall vibes. Did you ever watch that series?
No. What's Over the Garden Wall?
It's a little animated mini-series from, oh, probably like 8 or 10 years ago. It's absolutely fantastic. I highly recommend everyone watches it. The animation itself is beautiful, and it's got the most amazing, spooky music, just stunning arrangements. It's really great. And it just kind of really reminded me of that, like your... in some like really spooky dark forest and the river's running through it and the light's all weird. It's not nighttime. Maybe it's twilight. You shouldn't be there. It's not all as it seems. Like, that was kind of the feeling. The only other thing that I did think about this track, though, I mean, the choir at the very end. Can you play the end of the track again? Just because kids are cute, man, like, you gotta, who cast this choir? It's pitchy, guys. Pick it up. You're never gonna win regionals at this rate.
Your parents can't afford to send you to a different music school. This is a not-for-profit. You are chasing their dreams. Do you want this to be an Oscar-nominated film? If you want it to be an Oscar-nominated film, you need to put your fucking back into it, children.
The rest of the tracks, they're doing a great job. I'm just saying, track four, let's work on the pitchiness a little bit.
I love how on board you are for this album, though.
I'm surprised too, because I looked at it and I was like, oh, here we go. A couple of 2009 sad boys with their manic pixie dream boy vibes and everything sepia toned in your music videos. I've heard this before, but it is, you know, it is all of that, but it is also more.
No, this is interesting because I was not quite in at this point. I felt like we were four tracks in and there had been one track that I enjoyed, and I honestly paused during Buried in the Water because I was listening to this at the gym and I'm like, this is too sad to listen to at the gym. Is depressing music. You can't lift weights to depressing music or you're not going to pick them back up. You're just going to let them rest on you and ground you into the dirt.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. So I think it's fair to say at this point I'm much more on board than you are. However, if it makes you feel better, the next song really freaked me out, and not in a good way. Here we go. So I can play.
That was My Body's a Zombie for You, Dead Man's Bones. Righty, your spooky meter has gone up.
I feel uncomfortable with children singing these lyrics. Thank you. I don't want to hear kids singing My Body is a Zombie for You or The Smell of My Breath in the Blood of Your Neck. No, thank you. Not for me. Don't enjoy that. Doesn't matter how great the melody is. It skeezed me out. What did you think?
I quite like this song. This is like, I get your point as well. Like, I find it's a bit, but also, like, you can hear them having a lot of fun. Like, that's weird to say, but, like, you can hear how much the choir is enjoying it. And it gave me that sense of, this isn't, you're not too far up your own arse on this. Like, this isn't the first draft of Ghostbusters where Dan Aykroyd thinks he's making a documentary and it's 300 pages long about how people in the future will actually have to fight ghosts. This is the actual draft of Ghostbusters we get to see where it's all fun and full of Slimer.
I think you're right. It is really fun, and you can hear that in the performances. It's like, it's not perfect, which I think adds so much charm. There's a lot of, like, brightness in the kid's voice. It's definitely also the most Halloween-y song so far, just lyrically, which I think, you know, especially for kids, would be so much fun. I think something as well that's worth talking about, which might be contributing to, even if, you know, the lyrics are a bit strange, it is so much fun. Zach Shields and Baby Goose, Ryan Gosling, adorable Baby Goose, put a whole set of rules and limitations on making the album for themselves, right, which I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. So one of them was trying not to do more than three takes per song, or, you know, like, which I think is kind of fun, and some of those imperfect moments actually add to the charm. The fact that there is a bit of messiness in the children's choir at points and there are some wrong notes, but it's kind of really draws you in. I think that's great. One of the other rules,
Bob Dylan-esque.
One of the other rules I had was that they played, I'm not sure if it was all of the instruments, but most of the instruments on the record, even though they didn't know how to play all the instruments. So they were teaching.
Great rule.
So they were teaching themselves as they went along, which I guess is another way to sort of let the imperfections add to the story that they're trying to tell, I guess. Maybe that's the vainest part of this vanity project. No, I don't play the cello, but I will play the cello for this album.
I think that, like, it's a vibes album. It's not about, like, it's not about anything being perfect. It's the vibe. The vibe of this is vaguely spooky, and finding yourself being recorded playing an instrument you do not know is very spooky.
Yeah.
I also like thinking of this from the perspective of the musical, because you can see if this were a musical, what would be happening. Like, this is your big love song, My Body's a Zombie for You, which is... Which is great. I was reminded of a sketch we did, 12 years ago now. But it was about the zombie apocalypse and two people being left in the middle of, we have people like zombies running down the stairs and being shot and all this stuff. And then it's revealed that the fella had started the plague because he had been told, I would only date you if you were the last man on earth. That was a kind of like a comedy tinged with sadness, tinged with more sadness, that was very much my brand at the time.
Love it. That's beautiful. I think I remember the sketch. But you're right. It's definitely that moment in the musical. And I think calling it a vibes album really sums up what it is for me so far anyway. It's not perfect. I actually couldn't sing you back any lyrics that I've heard so far. Like, there's nothing
that's a good point.
There's no earworms, but I'm enjoying letting it sort of wash over me. So let's press on to power.
Again, track I very much like. This is on my playlist track. Like, if this came up, I'm not being like, well, there's Baby Gooses, Ryan Gosling's band. I'm like, this is a song that could fit in with so many others of around the time. Perfectly fine, fun song.
It's really fun.
I feel weird about how much I like this album, Cardi. I really don't want to care for it.
I know. I'm having a similar reaction myself. I think this is the first sort of catchy tune, right, in that chorus. You've got that, like, really great staccato, punchy papa power, and then it goes back to that smoother kind of melodic moment. Love that. It's so fun. It, like, buried itself in my brain all week, which I really enjoyed. It's also a song that has been covered by quite a few artists, most notably Cat Power. It's fun. I don't know what the lyrics mean, but I enjoy it.
Well, as a new dad, Papa Power means the ability to get up at 3 a.m. and do another feeding.
Ah, but in some languages, Papa means potato. Potato power. And a power I can get behind.
Let's move on to our next track, Young and Tragic.
Ooh.
Young and Tragic, Dead Man's Bones, Bridie, I'm Bored Again.
Could you tell me how long that track runs for, please?
I'll just check one second. Mm-hmm. 2 years.
Yeah, two years. Bridie. And you know what's interesting in that 2 year long song? There's only like two lyrics that they just repeat again and again and again. In case you missed it, they're both young and tragic. The whole time I listened to the song, I was so sleepy, but also just like, dudes, cheer up. You know, it's Halloween. We're all going to have some chocolate. It's fine.
I don't know now. Now this is added, like, you've just given me the thought that what this song should be is credits music for, like, The OC or One Tree Hill or that kind of era show where you have Young and Tragic playing and you have shots of these Dawson Creek types, you know?
That's interesting you say about closing credits, because in a couple of songs' time, we're going to get a song that was the closing credits music for a film. And it's interesting as well, like without going into too much detail, because we'll get to the reception of the album a little bit later, but a few of these tracks have been used in soundtracks. And I think that speaks to what you were saying before about this being quite a vibes-heavy album more than an album that you would listen to start to finish. It's very evocative. You do get little music videos that play in your mind as you listen to this. It's very emotion drenched. It's very nostalgia drenched, I think, this whole album. So it makes total sense to me, especially when you look at the fact that Baby Goose is an actor, Zach Shields is a director and producer and editor. I'm like, yeah, they kind of understand this whole soundtrack and cinematic evocative feeling to their music more so than just like banger singles. Yeah, so that's my TED Talk. Thank you.
Let's move on to Paper Ships. Sailed on a ship of paper, and I sank in the deep of your eyes. I got lost in your graveyard. That was Paper Ships, music for Zach Braff to have an emotional realization to.
I got quite excited at the start of the track. There's a little bit of a doo-woppy intro. I love some doo-woppy goodness. That's a great time. But I'm inclined to agree with your judgment there. I found this quote from Far Out magazine, and I think it really sums up how I feel about this song and, you know, quite a lot of the album, to be honest. It's got a rough, simple beauty that music has moved on from but was very in vogue in 2009. For some reason, it really feels as if this, or at least one of the songs from the record, should have been included on the soundtrack for 500 Days of Summer. Yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole mood of that movie in this song.
Absolutely. And it also explains why I'm quite bored, as I was during 500 Days of Summer. I feel like this really got... So, My Body's a Zombie for You and Papa Power, I was really in. And even like that run, the run that goes from In the Room Where You Sleep to Papa Power, 3 out of 4 of those tracks, really fun. One, a bit of a downer, but that's okay. Since then, oh my God, it feels like a lifetime ago. Like, this was a big problem I have with this album, which is everything gets so slow and boring that I will look up and be like, I'm 4 tracks further in than I thought I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or no. I'm one interminable track that will never end in.
Yeah. And also, if I wanted to revisit anything from 2009, it wouldn't be this like fashionably sad and quiet vibe, which was everywhere. It was in the movies and in a lot of music that was released at the time. But it was not, it's just not super interesting.
Yeah, it's not a fun time. And yeah, like I say, it's all of those films. It feels like, do you know what? It's also not spooky.
It's not spooky. It's a paper, scare me, make me feel something.
Yeah, at least halfway through this song, they should go, bah, just to make sure you pay attention.
I would love that. I would prefer that because I feel like, the lyrics, right? I sailed on a ship of paper. I sank in the deep of your eyes. I got lost in a graveyard. Now I dream on a bed of knives. Bed of knives? That's spooky. Nothing in the music, which is very gentle, very quiet, very slow. Nothing reflects a bed of knives. I found the map to your maps. What? I lost the shores for you, but now I'll never get back because I'm a ghost ship on the blue. A ghost ship? That's spooky. That's interesting. That is
spooky because this whole time I would have preferred to listen to Tripod's song, Ghost Ship.
But that's what I want. If you're going to have these quite spooky lyrics, let's reflect that in the music.
Let's move on to Lose Your Soul.
Yes, we are. That was so fun. This is the energy I require from the children's choir to win regional. So much energy. I mean this as well, and like I mean this as a compliment. This song could totally be licensed to be like on a globally released iPhone ad. It's like that, like we're vaguely like, don't you reckon? That's the vibe.
For me, it felt as if what would happen if the Gorillaz got depression. And I, you know, honestly, that's an album I'd listen to. the very sad Gorillaz. But you're right. This is like, the choir is very good in this. It's fun again. It's almost like deep inside this album, they've accidentally uploaded a couple of tracks from The National. And if they just got them out of there, this would be a very fun album to listen to.
Speaking of references to other bands, I looked at the album I looked at the record label that this album was released under, which is Anti Records. And this is a label with like some serious talent. It had like a lot of amazing soul singers, Mavis Staples, Solomon Burke. But there are some artists on this label which make total sense to me after listening to this album. Tom Waits is one of those artists.
Do you know, honestly, that's what, like, this song specifically has a real like Big in Japan vibe to it.
Absolutely. Fleet Foxes was another one that I'm like, oh yeah, I see how you share an uncle, the uncle being your record label. It works in my head. Marianne Faithfull, like there's a few artists on their roster where I'm like, okay, you all go to the same Christmas party. I get that.
Can you imagine? So like you're the head of that label. You represent Tom Waits. Like you are not struggling. And you get a call from Ryan Gosling and he says, I've already booked a children's choir because I'm going to do a spooky album. You on board or what?
I mean, who could say no to the Baby Goose?
Marty, it's Baby Goose here, BB Goosey. I got an album for you, and yes, it is a spooktacular.
Hey, another thing that I really like about this particular track, Lose Your Soul, is if anyone is going away and that, like listening to the entirety of these tracks, you'll notice there's a lot of sound effects in this album. We haven't really mentioned it yet. We did mention there was some wind effects, some wind foley at the start of the album. It's returned. The weather's back, y'all. It's windy again. But so far as well, I've also counted, like, I mean, like there's quite a lot of sound effects. There's some cricket noises at some point. There's some waves, the screaming, which we've mentioned, some crying. Like there's a lot going on.
Bridie.
Yeah.
You love a terrible joke.
Do I ever?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ah.
Ah who?
Werewolves of London. Our next song is called Werewolf Heart. You look nice in a grave. I smile at the moon. Death is on my face. That was Werewolf Heart. Dead Man's Bones.
I haven't recovered from your joke.
I was going to tell you that anyway. This does feel like another one of the songs on this album, which is like they just wrote a song that wasn't spooky. And then afterwards they're like, well, we're putting this on the album because we've only got 12 songs. So what if this the character in this is a werewolf and we just didn't mention it really?
Yeah. And also I don't think playing a slightly out of tune piano in the upper range is enough to make something spooky. It goes a ways to making things spooky, and so does featuring a children's choir. But on the scale of perfectly calm to very terrified, I'm perfectly calm after hearing this song.
You just reminded me of a story, Bridie, of in Los Angeles, there's this place called the Magic Castle, and you have to be invited by a magician or friend of magician to get in. And I am pleased to say I didn't know any, but was a friend of a friend of a magician. So we went along, and there was a piano playing by itself, and you can give it requests, and it changes songs.
What a clever piano.
It's pretty cool. Like it feels like it's got a kind of like imagine in your head, you know, a room in one of the Harry Potter films where like images are moving and all stuff like that. It's got very much that vibe. And so we're in there and we're listening to this is horrible. We're listening to this piano play and people are sitting around giving it requests and there's a bar and you're just waiting for the shows to start. And a man falls down the stairs and everyone pauses.
Oh
For a
no,
while,
it
trying to
laughed.
work out.
Is this not a magic trick?
Well, that was exactly the problem we had, Brady. Oh, No, he does appear hurt, but is that
Oh
part of the tr No, he is quite hurt. Well, we'll go into the shows and someone else will sort this
I did exactly what you did. I laughed. I thought it was a magic trick. Oh, that's
I will
terrible.
make his hip disappear.
You know what's funny? There's no relation to the song we just listened to. I think you just wanted to brag that you've been to the Magic Castle.
Yeah, exactly. I've been into the most exclusive magician club in the world. Really, all magician clubs are exclusive because they don't get an audience. Let's move on.
Well, James, guess what?
What?
I don't want to freak you out. But we're at the penultimate track, and it is in
Ah, penultimate.
fact the title track. This is Dead Man's Bones from the album Dead Man's Bones.
There are rows and rows and rows of dead men.
That's Dead Man's Bones, Dead Man's Bones, Dead Man's Bones. Righty Cuddle.
To me, okay, the note that I wrote down, I feel very conscious that some weeks I will give what I hope is slightly more intelligible musical commentary. And I might mention the arrangement or the instrumentation, but I haven't really done that on this time. My note, like on this album at all, right? I've just talked about the vibes. My note again for this song is a vibe. I wrote down, now this is a pirate party.
We're now in Orlando Bloom's album.
Right. This is the vibe of this song for me. It's a pirate party. What did you think?
I think it was a pirate party.
Yeah.
They should have called this Dead Man's Chest, Bridie. It is a pirate party.
You know what I do think about the lyrics in this? I can't decide if it's, again, like I mentioned before, like a really cool picture book to listen to for kids, which is a little bit edgy. The lyrics, you know, you should know what's really going down below. Dressed in their best clothes, there are rows and rows and rows of dead man's bones. I'm talking
Don't you open that trap door?
Exactly. That's the vibe. Or is it someone who's just figured out or like just discovered the concept of skeletons and is registering a complaint? You should know what's really going down below. Yeah, they're dressed in the best clothes. There are rows of bones.
It's very funny to me to not know the word skeleton for this. It's like I'm being attacked by a dead man's bones. You know, bones from Dead Man. Dead Man Bones?
James, for an album called Dead Man's Bones, which was released for Halloween 2009, the word skeleton does not appear on this album, as far as I can remember.
I guess like it's they're not animated enough. Like in this case, the bones are just there. They're just bones. The bones have to do something before they're technically a skeleton. And as I'm saying that, I realize that a skeleton is just a medical thing and not necessarily a Halloween thing.
No, it's definitely a spooky thing. Right, let's get to the final song on this record. It is Flowers Grow Out of My Grave. That was Flowers Grow Out of My Grave, the final track on Dead Man's Bones. James, what do you think of that song?
It's Depressed Gorillaz, and I love it. This is where the vibe has ended up for me. That is 100% the kind of song that you could put that at the end of Demon Days and you would not notice.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I really agree with that. And I also think the choir give another ripper performance in this track. I think it's great. Which is all the more devastating when we talk about the reception and promotion of this album, that the choir was immediately cut from the tour. Too many children in the choir. They couldn't afford to bring them all on tour. So everywhere that Dead Man's Bones toured, they got a new local children's choir.
Mm, and that's what, if you watch the Dead Man's Bones documentary, which you absolutely should not, a lot of it is just wrangling a whole bunch of kids and getting them together and them finding out they get to dress up in spooky costumes and stuff. It's quite fun. It's fun.
The other fun, novel part of the promotional tour for this album, which was the Halloween season of 2009, was that the opening act before the choir and the band was a local talent show organized by the band, which is just a lot of effort, but real cute.
Yeah, a lot of effort. It's spooky going to see a local talent show. Yeah.
Can I tell you something as a quick side note?
Go on.
I have never gotten over this fact. When I was, I think, maybe like 14, I went to our local talent show in the Rakaia Town Hall, and it went for 5.5 hours.
Oh my God. I've never
gotten over that. There was
my talent is performing the first half of Angels in America.
Anyway, this is a quick side note.
So, Bride, we're getting at the end of this album here, and Dead Man's Bones don't come back. Their Twitter account has been inactive since 2012 to show how inactive that is. It links to MySpace. There hasn't been a Dead Man Bones 2, Curse of the Dead Man, The Legend of the Dead Man's Gold. None of these have emerged. Would you listen to another Dead Man Bones album?
You know, I actually think the fact that it's one and done is part of the charm of the album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they needed any
more. They got the spook out of their system.
Well, I clearly, you know, had some other things to do, like go be nominated for Oscars and, you know, star in big movies. As fun as this album is, I'm not sure that I would listen to more.
So that brings us to our ultimate question. Bridie Connell, was this album a mistake?
No, this album was not a mistake. This album was one of the albums that I've enjoyed the most on this podcast. It's not perfect. In fact, it's decidedly imperfect. It's very weird. It's at times boring and at times a hell of a great time. I really enjoyed it. It's like I'm going to keep a strange fondness, I think, for it. James, was this album a mistake?
This album should have been a mistake.
Mm.
It should have been. It had everything going against it. It's good. I like it.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's not that vain. It's a little weird, and I'm glad it's a little weird. I would take a fucking spooky album. If Robert Downey Jr.'s whole album was songs about skeletons and graves, I'd be in on it.
Yeah, 100%. And look, it's not an album that set the world on fire commercially, but it did feature on some soundtracks, The Conjuring and Age of Panic as well. It also, you know, is an album that has been referenced by a lot of other artists as a bit of an influence. So, you know, it's not like the definitive album of the decade or anything, but it's a fun time. Recommend checking it out.
It is a Ryan Gosling of albums. It's not incredible, but it's good.
There are better Ryans.
All right, thank you all for listening along. We've gotten a lot of lovely feedback from everyone listening, and that's very nice because I only send in hate mail.
Please stop doing that. You're dragging our rating down. But thank you so much to everyone who's listened. We really appreciate it. Please give us a follow on Instagram. We're at Vanity Project Pod. You can rate and review the show. That helps other people find it.
And otherwise, we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bah. Just gained a bit of spook at the end. Just when you let your guard down. Got ya.
Terrified.